I'm continuing series I started last week on a renewed mind, which comes out of Romans 12:2. And last week we talked about worship. This week I want to go a different direction, and I want everybody to consider this question right off the bat. We're going to a question. So everybody ask yourself, I don't care if you do it verbally or not, however you want, ask yourself this question. Do I set an example with my life that other people should follow? Do I set an example with my life that other people should follow? Now, you don't necessarily need to think about why or why not right now, but should people follow your example, yes or no? Now, to go with that, to go a little bit further, consider some of these questions. You don't have to ask yourself, but you may want to write them down if they speak to you. But consider these questions carefully. Would you be pleased if your children grew up to be exactly like you? Not pretty much like you, exactly like you. To a T. Everything, every single good thing about you and every single flaw about you, would you be pleased if your children grew up to be exactly like you? And this message is not to make you feel bad about yourself, okay? We're going to get there. Next question, what if your friends were exactly like you? I mean, would that make them perfect friends? Is that what your desire is, that maybe your friends would be exactly like you and then they'd finally be perfect? What about coworkers or classmates? If they were exactly like you, would they finally be coworkers or classmates that you would enjoy working with, that you would enjoy going to school with? These are the kinds of questions I want to be thinking about as we dive into this message, because we have a great, great, great responsibility in the way we live our lives. We do. We have a tremendous responsibility because people around us are affected by the way we act and the things that we say. All around us. You are an influencer. You realize that. You are an influencer. Each and every one of us are an influencer because people are learning from our example, whether we intend for them to or not. See, a lot of times we try to let ourselves off the hook because we're not trying to be an example. Like, I see sports players say this all the time. The ones that are, you know, just this side of prison, but they're making, you know, million-dollar paychecks, and they're like, well, I'm an athlete. I didn't ever sign up to be an example. Oh, yeah, you did. The minute you signed that contract to play a professional league that millions of children all across the world look up to, the minute you signed that deal, you signed up to be an influencer, to be an impactor of their lives, because they look up to those people, kind of what I talked about last week. They idolize those people. Even though they're not worthy of it, they still do. So we have this great responsibility, and part of where we get hung up as a society is in our society, and I know I have a couple teachers in here, I'm going to tread lightly for a minute, but in our society, knowledge is king. That's the belief. I don't agree with it, but it's the belief that knowledge is king in this society. Like, the more you know, as a matter of fact, that used to be a commercial. It's like one of those 2-second commercials, the more you know, like, came on all the time on some station. I remember that. But, and probably in about 5 years, you're going to have a college degree to work at a car wash. Like, that's the way our society is going. You realize that? Knowledge is king. You have to have knowledge for everything. And so what we do as a society is we're constantly trying to teach the right thing. We're trying to teach people, teach people, teach people. If you're a parent, you're constantly trying to teach your kids. If you are an aunt or an uncle, you're trying to teach your nephews and nieces. If you're a friend, you're trying to teach your friends, teach your coworkers. Some of us are trying to teach our parents. I'm only saying that because I'm pastoring the church that my parents go to. But, you know, sometimes we're teaching people, right? All around us, we're constantly teaching. And that's not a bad thing. It's actually a good thing. But we're always focused on showing people better methods and about trying to get people to change their mind. Convince them that this way is the correct way. This way is better. And so the common view of being an example today is really knowledge. It's really, what do you know? That's how people are judged a lot of times, is by what do you know? What kind of knowledge do you have? Knowing stuff, having answers. And so again, Romans 12:2 tells us, Paul says, do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. Perfect will of God. So we need this renewed mind on how to be an example, because our society says that you're a good example if you make good money. But usually that takes knowledge. It takes education. It takes sometimes really good fortune, or, you know, just having a rich person in your family. But really, knowledge tends to be king. And so we need this renewed mind. We need to see that knowledge is a very, very important piece of being an example, because we have to know what to do. We have to know how to act. We have to know what to say. But we so often, as a society, leave it right there. That I know what to do, and I can tell you what to do, and that's it. Right? That's the extent of my teaching, is I will tell you what you need to do. And, you know, so often we look around, and there's times where Christy and I, one of our kids, will do something. Sometimes we're really baffled, like, where do they get this from? Like, who did they learn this from? And Marissa did something the other day. I'm not going to say what it was. I don't want to embarrass her or me. But she did something the other day, and I was like, that's me. Like, that's what I would do in that situation. And it wasn't a bad thing, but it's just the way she reacted to something. When I sit down and I evaluate, like, things that my kids do, most of them I can find in either me or her. Really. I mean, if you really, a lot of them you're going to lie to yourself and you're going to be like, that doesn't come from me and I don't remember her doing it. No, if you get down to the root of it, the overwhelming majority, if you have a decent relationship with your kids, it's probably going to come from you. And so we need to get past this thing where we can just tell people what to do. And how do we actually set an example? How do we actually show people what they're supposed to do? And so Philippians chapter 4, verse 8, if you want to turn there, Paul says this. He says, finally, brethren, whatever things are true, whatever things are noble, whatever things are just, whatever things are pure, whatever things are lovely, whatever things are of good report, if there is any virtue, and if there is anything praiseworthy, meditate on these things. These are the words of Paul right here in this scripture. And Paul, he gets it. He gets being an example. And if you read through the letters that Paul wrote, he understands. He gets this concept of being an example, because he says all these things that are true, they're noble, just, pure, lovely, good, praiseworthy. Meditate on these things. Think about these things, because you need that knowledge. You need to know about these things. You need to meditate on them. You need to remember them. You need to learn them. But that's not it. It's not enough to have knowledge. He goes on in verse 9 and he says, these things which you learned and received and heard and saw in me, these do, and the peace of God will be with you. The things you learned, received, heard, and saw in me, do these things, and the peace of God will be with you. So Paul realizes that to be an example, knowledge is important. You do have to have it. I mean, why would you want to follow somebody that doesn't know why they're doing the things that they're doing? You do have to have knowledge. And he says, you learned this knowledge from me. You learned it from me. You heard it from me. But he also says, that which you received and saw in me. He could have just said, the things that you heard from me, the things I taught you, do those things. Think about those things. But he doesn't leave it there. He's like, the things that you received and saw in me. So if you receive it, first of all, that means you're accepting it. If you're accepting it as true, you believe it. And for most of this comes not after just hearing, not after just learning, but also after seeing, right? Because we want proof. We want to know. If you tell me that you can do something that seems absolutely ridiculous, probably no matter how much I trust you, I'm going to be like, okay, yeah, right. Let me see it, right? Let me see that, because that sounds like it's a little far-fetched. We want proof. And so Paul is this guy. You know, Paul's the guy who was causing Christians trouble. He had them imprisoned and killed. And he's a guy who one day has an encounter with Jesus. And on that day, he obtained knowledge. And then he changed what he was saying. Okay, so he has this encounter with the Lord. And I'm not saying he received all the knowledge that day, but he has an encounter. He receives knowledge. And then he changes what he's saying. So instead of I'm going around trying to kill all you Christians and have you imprisoned, I'm trying to point you to Jesus. Okay, that seems a little wild, a little crazy. And what did he have to do from that? He had to show them. He had to go beyond just saying it, because these people, why would they believe him and trust him? They need to see the actions. Okay, let me see that this guy's really changed. And probably even after seeing it, they wanted to see it a few times. They wanted to make sure he wasn't trying to trick them. But Paul is a man who has been through this. He's seen that I can teach you all the things that you desire to know, all the things you need to know, but there has to be some action that backs it up. And I've heard people claim that so-and-so will never change, or this situation will never get better, and this person's not capable of changing. And that may be true on their own. It absolutely might be true, but the power of God can change anyone. And for anybody that does not know about Paul, like, come see me. I'll show you what verses you need to read to really get a grasp about Paul. But Paul is our example for this. And Paul is this example that if the power of God changed Paul, he can change anybody. Power of God changed me, I believe he can change anybody. And so how do you prove to others that you have changed? It's by showing it every day, over and over, repetitive action, not by saying it and not even just by doing it once. And anyone can lie, but as we know, it's hard to do that consistently over and over and over without the truth being revealed, right? You know, that's the thing that we try to teach young people is you can lie, and some adults still need taught it too, but you can lie, but there will be a day where it will catch up to you, because lies are darkness, truth is light, and light always exposes darkness. Always. It's not possible for darkness to hide from the light. Once the light comes, darkness loses. It's too late, it's over with. But we see this, you have to be constant showing, encouraging, letting people see. And so our example is critical to the people that are around us. And I don't think that we really understand and grasp a lot of times the impact that we really have on people, on other people, because people relate to other people. You realize that? People relate to other people, and people learn from other people. That's true. People relate to other people, they learn from other people, and yes, absolutely, Jesus is our example, and yes, absolutely, Jesus is the one that we should be looking to. But have you considered this? Have you considered that a person that is hurting, they can't usually relate to Jesus in that hurt? They can't. They can't relate to Jesus in that hurt. And most of these things, and hear what I'm saying here, because I'm hopefully I relay it clearly, but most of the things we go through in life, you know, they're not exact examples of something that Jesus did in the Bible, right? I mean, we see a lot about trials and tribulations he went through on the way to the cross, but we see a lot about that. We don't see a lot about everyday, day-to-day stuff that we go through. So people, a lot of times, have difficult time relating to Christ in their own struggles in this life. And so we don't know always exactly what would Jesus do. I love WWJD. I wish that it didn't become cliche, because I wish that we did. Like, okay, what would Jesus do? Okay, that's what I'll do. That is the mindset that we should have. And we can speculate and we can make an educated guess based on what? Knowledge. Knowledge is good. But a person who they can relate to is another person. A person can't always relate to Christ, but they can relate to another person. They can see, how did you handle something? How did you handle this situation? They can see how you responded to a similar situation in your life. They can listen to your testimony and they're like, oh, wow, I had no idea that person went through that. And then they can relate with you as an individual. Did you respond in faith when you had this situation in your life? Did your actions point towards Christ? Did you have the love of God? Did you have patience? Did you trust in Jesus as you were going through your trials? See, we have so much more than knowledge. We have so much more to offer than knowledge, and it requires more than knowledge, because correct thinking or correct belief must lead to correct practice. Correct thinking or belief must lead to correct practice, because it doesn't matter what you know if you refuse to do it. It doesn't matter what you know if you refuse to do it. And you think about someone who knows CPR. You suppose that there's someone that falls to the ground suddenly and someone checks for their pulse, and I'm standing here and I know CPR. I've been through the training. I know exactly what I'm supposed to do, and I just stand here like this. Well, what good is that? Yeah, I mean, well, who cares if I know CPR? Somebody might be like, hey, that guy knows CPR. And I'll just be like, yeah, I mean, what good is the knowledge if we don't put it to practice? What good is the knowledge if we don't show, oh yeah, I know CPR and I can use this to help save this guy's life? That's the point where we're at as Christians right now today. All the knowledge that we have in this room, it ought to move our feet and our hands and our mouths to help some guy who's needs his life saved. Amen? We ought to be putting it into practice. And so we have to know that our knowledge is worthless without using it. Okay? And yeah, I understand you can pull it out. You can pull out the reserve for later. But listen, somebody might need it right now, today. And the things that you've done all the way up until today may have made you uncredible to that person, because you've never done it before. You've never walked it out before. And so it's so important what we do. And this is where Paul has this boldness to make this statement in 1 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 1. He says, got it up here, 1 Corinthians chapter 1, imitate me as I also imitate Christ. Now, if you guys know Paul, once he got saved and transformed, he's a pretty humble guy. He thought pretty low of himself. And he makes a statement like that, to imitate me as I also imitate Christ. Now, he could have very well just said, hey, don't look at me, look at Jesus. You know, I know what to do. I know what we're supposed to do, but I can't do it. So don't look at me. Look at Christ. And we do see where Paul's had some struggles, that I do the things I don't want to do and I'm not doing the things I want to do. And we see this struggle where he struggles with the flesh and the spirit, which, by the way, now we're able to relate with Paul. Like, yeah, Paul, I know what you're talking about. I go through that. But he doesn't use stuff like that as like, oh, do not look at me. Do not look at me. Look at Jesus. Okay? Now, it's true, we ought to be pointing people to Christ. But again, people relate with people. People need to see Christ in us. Christ in us. That's what they need to see coming out. And so we do this by showing people, not just by sharing knowledge. So sometimes you can tell someone over and over and over something and it never clicks. And I'm one of these people that if you can tell me something 100 times and I might not ever get it, and then you show me, and you probably will never have to show me again, unless I don't have to do it for like a year or 6 months, then I may forget because I'm not practicing it, because I'm not doing it, and I have the knowledge, but I'm not putting it into action. But there's a lot of people like that that are like that. And this is the problem with church hypocrites. They tell people all the things that they need to do, but they can't show them how to do any of it. Right? That's what a hypocrite is. That's why people, maybe some of you in this very room, or you may know people, that they will not come here. They're not here today because of hypocrites. Right? You guys, I mean, I know people that are not here today because of hypocrites in the church. Now, that's not a justified reason, because just because someone else is a hypocrite doesn't mean that you should just throw your salvation in the air, Hail Mary, and hope I make it, you know? But that's why. It's because they don't have people that are telling them what to do and then showing them how to do it. They have a bunch of people that just throw knowledge around and then do whatever they want. And it's been known for a long time in education, in the education system, that children learn things in a variety of ways. If you're a parent, you can relate to that. But if, you know, we have some teachers in this place, and you guys know that children learn in a variety of ways. You can't just teach this way and every kid's going to get it the same. Some may, some may not. Some may get it later. It just depends. And so kids being lectured to on how to do things over and over and over, when that happens, they're limited. They're limited in their learning. If all they do is hear over and over and over, this is how you do this, this is how you do this, this is how you do this, they will be very, very limited in learning. But if a teacher shows them how things work, demonstrates it, and allows them to do it for themselves, then education is enhanced, right? Now it's not just like, oh, well, Mrs. Jackman just keeps telling me over and over and over that, you know, this is how you solve this problem. And then when she gets on the board and she works it out and then gives them some and like, here, now you try using this method. Then they can get it. They can understand. It helps them. It enhances that education. And so this is why they draw and color, write stories and these types of things in grade school. And this is why in high school, you know, Mr. Meganhart does like labs and projects and these types of things, because it's not just because teachers want an easier way, because oftentimes those things are not actually easier. And it's not because they're lazy. It's because they're trying to help the kids learn. It's because just telling them over and over does very little. It limits education. Instead, they're showing an example. This is how you do this. Now here, you try. I'll tell you if you do something wrong, and I'll try to help you understand what you did wrong and correct it so that you can do it better next time. Teachers get this. They understand how to show examples, but we as Christians, a lot of times we have this worldly perspective that as long as you know, okay, as long as I know Jesus, okay, head knowledge, no. As long as I know who Jesus is, I'm good to go. Wrong. Dead wrong. It does matter that you know him. That is the first step. It is a requirement. Then what are you doing with that knowledge? There's so much more than just knowledge. Knowledge on its own, for the most part, is pretty much worthless. And we see Jesus, he spent a lot of time with his disciples. A lot of time with his disciples. And he didn't just tell them things. He showed them. He didn't just say, you know what? Here you go. You're empowered. Now go out and pray for people. No, he took them with him. He took them with while he prayed for dead people that were raised to life. He took them with him while he prayed and saw demons cast out. He took them with him when he multiplied food and did miracles. And he took them with him when he spurned the upright, you know, the prideful religious people, basically. And he took in the sinner who was hurting, who needed him, who needed to know him, whose hearts were prepared and open. He showed them all of this stuff. And Jesus taught with words, because knowledge is important. But then he backed it up and he taught with his life. He taught with the way that he lived his life. See, being an example of what we do is just as important, probably more important than the knowledge. It's just, you got to have the knowledge. You got to know what to do. But again, nobody cares what you know. Really. I mean, I could tell you a lot of things that I know that most of you wouldn't care at all about. Okay. Knowledge is, it's good, but it's not the final thing. You got to be able to walk it out. You got to be able to show it. I've interviewed people for jobs before that they had all kinds of knowledge. And then we hired them where I used to work. They were not very good. Like, I mean, really, they knew what the book said. They knew, I mean, they knew it front and back, everything that you're supposed to do. But guess what? In the real world, you know, you usually get some variables in there that you can't teach in a book. You usually get some things that you learn by experience how to overcome. And, you know, it's not just about knowledge. It's not about what you know. It's how can you apply it? How can you do it and show it? And so I'm going to go on to 1 Timothy chapter 4, verse 12. And for those that don't know, this is the verse that our junior high and senior high ministry is named after, 4:12. But 1 Timothy 4:12 says this: Let no one despise your youth, but be an example to the believers in word, in conduct, in love, in spirit, in faith, and in purity. Now, this is the Apostle Paul. He's writing to Timothy, you know, a young man who they believe was in his early teens, pastoring a church of several thousand people. And Paul says, don't let them look down on you because you're young, because of your age, because you're not young in faith, but be an example. You can tell them the truths of the scriptures, but you're also going to have to show them how they can do it by how you do it. Be an example. Show them. Don't just preach to them. Show them that you walk it out in your daily life. And for those of you that don't know much about Timothy, he had a mother and grandmother that were full of faith. In 2 Timothy, Paul talks about them, that his mother and grandmother were faithful women of God. And so he'd been taught well prior to being connected with Paul. But then he was mentored personally by Paul, who was mentored really personally by Jesus, because he said that he received all of his knowledge from Jesus. And so knowledge alone is not enough. He had to teach knowledge, but he had to be an example, because credentials will only get you so far. Credentials only get you so far in life. But this instruction here, you know, it is to a young pastor of a very large congregation, but this instruction is not just for a young pastor. This instruction is part of the Great Commission. It's part of the Great Commission to go and make disciples, teaching them to observe the things that Jesus said. Now, how do we do that? You can't just do it by telling them. You have to show them. This is how I do it. This is how you put this stuff into action. What do you mean I'm supposed to have faith whenever things are going hard? Well, you get in your word, you seek the Lord, and you push through. No, it's not easy, but here's how I did it. Or, you know, I'll let you talk to this person. They dealt with a similar situation, and here's how they did it. Let's show people. Show people how to love when someone wrongs you or doesn't meet your expectations. Sometimes people wrong you, and sometimes they just don't meet your expectations. You guys realize that? It's not always the same thing. But regardless of what it is, we show people how to love them, even when they've wronged us, even when we're mad, when we're upset, when we need to forgive people. We need to show people how to do that. You can't just tell someone how to do it all day. And so we're going to take some time, and I want to look through this right here, what Paul is telling Timothy to do. And so as we do, if you need to write these down, I mean, it's in 1 Timothy 4:12, but you can write them down, ask God to show you how you can improve in these areas and to be an example to those around you. But again, 1 Timothy 4:12, let no one despise your youth, but be an example to the believers in word, in conduct, in love, in spirit, in faith, in purity. So in word, you know, first in word, it seems pretty simple, because it is. It's speech. It's what do we say? What comes from our mouth? What do we do? What do we teach people? Do we teach them to speak one way, but then we speak another? Like, do you tell people don't say that, and then you say it? Think about stuff like that. Because if that's what you're doing, then you need to fix that, because you're not setting a very good example. And I'm around people sometimes that, you know, listen, I've been coming to church here for, I think, 8 years or 7 years or something. However long, I don't know, it's been a long time. But as a church member who is not saved, I've been here as a deacon, as an elder, and now as a pastor. And now, in the last, like, 1 year, people think that it's not cool to cuss around me. Right? I mean, you realize that? Like, now, it's like, you shouldn't cuss around him. He's a preacher. And I had this happen recently, and, you know, but I'm like, you shouldn't say that if I'm not here. Like, it doesn't matter if I'm here or not. You just shouldn't say it. It's about what example are we setting forth? What are we showing people? And in our word, what do we say? Matthew 12:36 says, but I say to you that for every idle word men may speak, they will give an account to it, account of it in the day of judgment. You ever think about that? We always think about the things that we do. Like, you know, I did this, I did that. You know, somebody cheats on their spouse, or they punch somebody, or, you know, things like that. We think about the things that we physically do. In Matthew, Jesus says, you're going to be accountable for the things that you said, the things that came from your mouth. That's why we're supposed to be quick to listen, slow to speak, slow to anger, because you're going to be accountable for what comes out. You're also going to be accountable for what comes out whenever you're telling someone, whether it's kids or people at work or friends, whoever you have influence over, that they're supposed to do this, and then you do this. Okay? We're going to be accountable for what we say. And, you know, idle words are careless or unprofitable words. That's what idle words are. Every idle work, everything that's careless, everything that's unprofitable, that accomplishes nothing, those are idle words. When that sinks in, that's going to really sting somebody. It really stung me whenever I read it. I'm like, man, every unprofitable word, every word that doesn't accomplish anything for the glory of God. If it's unprofitable, that means it didn't profit anything. Anything that's unprofitable. And so these things, this is really the kind of talk that's displeasing to God. This would be things that don't edify, things that don't have a good purpose in life. And, you know, what matters is how we say, but it also matters, or what matters is what we say, but it also matters how we say it. So not just what kind of words you use, but like, how are you saying it? How are you responding? What kind of tone are you using? And Colossians 4:6, we're told, let your speech always be with grace, seasoned with salt, that you may know how you ought to answer each one. Seasoned with grace. I tell you what, that's an area that sometimes I need some help in. Sometimes, you know, my wife is a grace person. She's one that she always wants to try to look past whatever the issue is. She wants to give people the benefit of the doubt. And that's something that God's still working in me. There's a lot of times I do it, and there's a lot of times that I don't. And when I don't, it's when I'm not careful. I'm not quick to listen, slow to speak. I'm not careful with the words, not even the words that are coming out, but a lot of times thoughts. But we're to let our speech be seasoned with grace. We're to be careful about what comes out of our mouth. It is a big deal. If I give you, you know, $1 million, well, probably not $1 million. Most people would probably be really careless with that too. But if I gave you $1,000 and it's all you could live on for the next year, you'd probably be really careful with every penny that you spent, right? But with our words, we're so careless. Like, I got so many. I'm so unlimited in the words that I can speak. I'm going to say whatever I want, whenever I want. You know, it's all up to me. That's how we view it. We're to be careful. We're to be using words that are encouraging and edifying and building one another up and helping one another and glorifying God with the words that come out of our mouth. We ought to be careful with what we speak. Second thing is our conduct. He tells us to be an example in conduct. This is our behavior and our manner of life. And this is where, do you teach somebody to live one way and you do another? This would be the way that we actually carry out those words. And so we have to act like followers of Christ. Not act like, we have to be like, we have to be followers of Christ. But we see that in how we act. And in Ephesians 4:22, Paul tells us that you put off the old man and you put on the new man when you get saved. And so when you're saved, you become new. And here's a good thing to check out. If you're the same way that you were before you got saved, then you're probably not saved. I'm serious. Like, I'm a lot different. I'm far from perfect, but I'm a whole lot different than I was before I got saved. And if you believe that you're saved and you are not changed one iota from the way that you used to be, then you haven't put off the old man and put on the new man. And if there's no new man, there's no rebirth. And I got bad news for you. So, I mean, that's stuff we can take care of. We can take care of that. But we have to look at that, how we act. Matthew 7, verses 17 to 20 says, even so, every good tree bears good fruit, but a bad tree bears bad fruit. A good tree cannot bear bad fruit, nor can a bad tree bear good fruit. Every tree that does not bear good fruit is cut down and thrown into the fire. Therefore, by their fruits, you will know them. Our behavior matters. The things we do matter. It matters a lot because it's the evidence of a changed man or woman. It's the evidence of the Holy Spirit working in our lives. And no, we cannot be saved by the things that we do, but the things we do show if we're saved. The things that we do are the evidence of whether we are changed, of whether God has worked in our life and is working in our life. Fruit is the evidence of salvation. The third thing, we're supposed to be an example in love. And this love is goodwill, benevolence. This doesn't mean PDA, like it's supposed to be a good example of love. This means how we view others, brotherly love, love for other people. And do we teach that we should love other people unconditionally, but our actions don't reinforce that teaching? Are we quick to deny somebody or to talk down about somebody, even though we're telling people around us that we need to love unconditionally, no matter what people do? But the minute they do something to us, it's different. Is that the way that we are? Because if that's the way we are, we're not being an example in love. Jesus commanded us to love God and love people. And how many exceptions did he list? Zero. He didn't say love God and love people that deserve it. He didn't say love God and love people that are nice to you and don't wrong you. He didn't say love God and then love people until they do this or unless they do this. That's not what he says. There's no exceptions listed. And then in 1 John 4:20, John says this: if someone says, I love God and hates his brother, he's a liar. If someone says, I love God and hates his brother, he's a liar. For he who does not love his brother whom he has seen, how can he love God whom he has not seen? And this commandment we have from him, that he who loves God must love his brother also. Now, some people are letting themselves off the hook right now. Like, well, brother means sibling. No, it doesn't. Well, brother means a fellow believer. No, it doesn't. Not in this context. Brother does not mean fellow believer. It means any fellow man. We're to love any fellow man. If you hate any person, you probably ought to pray about that today. Like, you probably ought to hit your knees. If you need to right now, is fine. But if we hate people, it says the love of God is not in us. We are to love people. And you know what? We're not perfect and we do got room to grow. If that's some area that you need to grow in, today is going to be your opportunity at the end of service that we're going to pray for you if need be. But, you know, we've got to show that we love people unconditionally. We've got to not show partiality, to not view people differently because of the way they look or even what they've done. It's really, really hard to do. But it's what God desires of us. It's what he requires of us. It's what he asks us to do. And so how much different would it be? Just think for just a moment. If all Christians, not just us, if all Christians loved every other person unconditionally on the face of this earth, how different do you think our world could be? It could be pretty different because you do a lot of things for people that you love that you won't do for people that you don't love, right? You'll do a lot of things for people that you love that you wouldn't do for someone that you don't love. And so this has to be, you know, if you don't have this stuff in you, I'm telling you today that you don't have to beat yourself up and feel bad about it. You ask God who changed Paul to change you today. Because it's not something that you can necessarily just, okay, I'm going to do this. You may fall short again. This is something that's got to be birthed from God because this is a love. Read through 1 Corinthians 13. This is a love that overcomes a whole lot of stuff that's really hard to do. But we can pray for that. We can ask God to help us by his Spirit. And the fourth thing that we're to be an example in is in spirit. And this is the vital principle by which the body is animated, is how it describes this, the Greek word here. And it's by the power which a person feels, thinks, or decides. So what it means is, like, in a sense, is like our mental disposition. How are we? It's kind of like a cheerleader. Do you got spirit? Like, if you got a cheerleader that's like, you know, they got no spirit. Like nothing. This isn't the Holy Spirit. It's not what it's talking about. But it's our spirit. How do we carry ourselves? What's our disposition? And it's not part of spirit, soul, body. But it's he's telling Paul to let his attitude be an example. Let your attitude be an example of how you minister to these people. And I believe it's the NIV omits the word spirit here. But attitude is vitally important to people's lives. And you think about employers and employees. Employers have employees that might do their job well and their attitude's not any good. Guess what? Those people are usually cancers. You know, I don't really use that word loosely, but it really is like that. Somebody's got a bad attitude and poof, spreads rapidly everywhere, faster than you can put out the fire. And the people who have been in those situations where you're not part of that, you know how bad it can get, how fast it can get. It's out of control, like all hope is lost. People that have those bad attitudes, they spread so bad. And these are not the people who gain respect of bosses and coworkers and are promoted and are asked to do things and to help. Because our attitude is often the determining factor in other people's lives when they look at us. When I deal with people, a lot of times I don't like to deal with people that have really bad attitudes, right? I mean, you're probably the same way, most of you, but you know, it's just not fun. It's not fun to deal with somebody who's really mean. Like, what, do you want my help and you're going to be mean to me about it? Like, come back when you're nice. I'll pray for you on your way out the door. But I mean, attitudes are so important because attitudes, they inspire others or they cause others to reject you. Our attitude, how we carry ourselves, our emotional or mental disposition, it allows people to either accept us or reject us. Like right off the bat, it could be, but we may not even get to any of the rest of this stuff because our attitude is one that's judgmental or it's arrogant or, you know, just mean or rude, fill in the blank, and then people don't want to deal with us. So Philippians 2, verse 3 through 4 says, let nothing be done through selfish ambition or conceit, but in lowliness of mind, let each esteem others better than himself. Let each of you look out not only for your own interest, but also in the interest of others. Now, this is the kind of spirit that's attractive. This is the kind of spirit that God likes, but it's also the kind of spirit that other people like. And there's some of you in this room that I know are so much like this. You'd do anything to help someone else at the expense of your own stuff. And I realize it's usually more fun to help someone else than to do your own projects. I'm like that too. But there's people that are like this. They view other people as more important than themselves. And they have this spirit of just humility and like, how can I help you? And yeah, I'll drop whatever I'm doing. It's not that important. I can come and help you. This is the kind of thing that attracts people and draws them. And then also in Philippians 2, verse 14 to 15, it says, do all things without complaining and disputing, that you may become blameless and harmless, children of God without fault, in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation, among whom you shine as lights in the world. That's how people are viewed that don't grumble and complain. You realize that? Like, I love people that don't grumble and complain all the time. This doesn't mean that you can't have an opinion. This is different. This means someone who, as soon as they come, you're like, oh man, what's that person going to complain about? I pray that you guys don't see that in me. If you do, please tell me. But if someone's coming and you're just looking for them, like they're going to complain about something, like people don't desire to be around that. It's not a very good example. You can tell people that you're supposed to be full of the joy of the Lord, and then you walk around and all you do is complain. Okay, I'm supposed to be full of what? Like, tell me that one more time. And then what they do is they're like, hey, Jan, here comes Billy. That guy who's always telling us to be full of the joy of the Lord. What do you think he's going to complain about today? Okay, now we're gossiping. You and your crummy attitude, your crummy spirit, now you're causing two other people to sin. Okay, I'm serious. It happens because that type of attitude, that type of disposition, it's cancerous. It spreads quickly to people. We have to be an example in spirit, how we carry ourselves, the attitudes we have. And then in faith, be an example in faith. This is trust and belief in God and his promises. Do we tell people, I know you're going through something, you just have to have faith. And then the very instant something happens in our lives, worry and fear. Is that where we're at? Because if we are, it's not a very good example. Because people can smell fear, okay? They say dogs can smell fear. People can smell fear too. I can tell when somebody's telling me about a situation in their life and they're joyful, they're hopeful because of the promises of God versus they're struck with fear and worry. And again, I'm not saying you're a bad person. I'm not saying that like all hope is lost for you if that's the way that you are. I'm saying pray that God would change that in you, that you could be this example of someone who's full of faith, who's encouraging. And there's a guy that Dave Cornwell goes to church with that's exactly like this. Like, I met this guy, and he's like, he is a spark plug. I mean, this guy is like crazy, happy, excited. And he was like, I didn't even realize that he was going through like some serious health issues with himself and with his dad at this time. And Dave's like, that guy's always like that. He's always excited. He's always just, he loves God. He loves that, you know, he's alive, and he loves that he has his faith. Whatever the enemy throws at him, he just continues to have faith. It's not that stuff doesn't bother him, but he doesn't let fear and worry overtake his life. He walks out. He is an example of what he preaches, that we're to have joy and that we're to have hope in God. And so when we face trials, do we clam up as though all hope is lost? Do we proclaim that God's promises are over our situation, trusting that he's in control and knows what's best for us? Like, how do we do it? Each and every one of us, we need to examine ourselves. And or do we just know what we're supposed to think? Do we know what the word says? Or do we know what the word says and we actually are an example of that? We actually show people, yes, I'm going through a hard time. Thank you for asking. This is how I'm dealing with it. My Savior, my Lord, I know that he said that he will never leave me. He's right here, even though it seems like he's not a liar. He's right here. And, you know, we have to be careful how we are with that, because you tell people stuff like that and you don't walk it out, before too long, they don't believe you. They don't believe you. And so even in James 2, verse 19, I love this verse, even though it's kind of a frightening verse, but James says, you believe that there's one God, you do well. Even the demons believe and tremble. James tells us that he talks about the importance of faith and works is what he's talking about in this section. And it's because we need more than knowledge. It's not just that you believe that there's one God. Okay, well, so do the demons, because he keeps on hammering them. He keeps on taking them out. They know that there's one God. It's not just about knowledge. It's about what do your works show? Do they show evidence that you believe in the one true God? Do they show evidence that you have faith by the way you live your life? Is there that fruit that you're bringing forth, that you are saved, that you're changed? We need to actually trust Jesus. Actually trust him. And have you ever met someone that's so full of faith, they don't seem like they have a care in the world? I know a couple other people that are kind of like that Tony, but these people, they're inspiring. They're a good example. Like, I love to be around them. And there was a point in my life, Trista was like that, Trista Altman, and she's one of those people that's like that. She was always encouraging. And I know she was going through stuff, but she was always encouraging. She was always full of faith. She was always energetic. And you know what? There's a time in my life that people like that drove me crazy. I'm serious. There's a time in my life where those people, I've shared with you guys before that there was a couple that used to walk by our house and they were always holding hands and smiling. And me and my wife had a pretty good marriage even at that point and wasn't saved, but they drove me crazy just because they walked down the road smiling. I'm like, what's wrong with these people? Like, that's weird. Like, it's weird that they smile the whole time. Like, that's the way that I didn't understand. I didn't get it. But when we get Jesus, when we understand, when we trust in him, when we fully put our trust in him, like, people that are like that should be an inspiration. They should be inspiring. They are a good example. And that's what we should desire for ourselves. And then the last thing is, be an example in purity. In purity. Live a moral life. Live a clean life, an honest life, a life that far exceeds the standards of the world, because those standards are really garbage. Do we teach people to live godly lives, but yet have secret sins that we don't deal with? Do we teach people that, well, you're not supposed to do this and this and this. You're supposed to do all these things we're talking about today. But yet you go home and scream and yell and, you know, cuss at people. And I mean, you're ungrateful. You're rude. You're unforgiving. You're a verbal abuser, physical abuser, drug addict, alcoholic, adulterer, porn addict, whatever the case may be. Are we telling people that they should not do these things and then we go home and do them behind closed doors? Because if we are, we're not being a very good example. We're not being a very good example of purity, because this stuff always comes to the light. Light exposes darkness. Do we live godly lives in public and live sinful lives in secret? Proverbs 28:13 says, "He who covers his sins will not prosper, but whoever confesses and forsakes them," see, it's not just confesses and forsakes them, like, I'm done with this, I'm repenting, I'm turning the other way, "they will have mercy." This is the point that we need to be at as Christians. It's not about, I should just give Erica the microphone and have her preach the rest of this, because this is really her heart lately, is it's about being genuine. You know what? We are people. And I'm not one to diminish sin and talk like it's no big deal. It's a very big deal, but every person in this room deals with it. Every person in this room has to battle it. Nobody's immune to it. And the day where we decide that we're going to tell people how they ought to live their lives, and then we're just going to hide sin behind closed doors and we're never going to deal with it, we're a bunch of liars and hypocrites. Absolutely. You've got to deal with it. It's not just, well, if nobody knows about it, then I'll keep my image and I'm good. That's not what it's about. You got to deal with it, or it's going to drag you further and further and further. We're to be an example of purity. When someone examines my life as I was, you know, helping with the youth for a while, as those kids look at me when I go to the school, I want those kids to look at me and like, oh, there's Pastor Tim. I don't want them to look at me as there's Pastor Tim, and then 5 years down the road, they're like, ugh, that guy was creepy. He was doing that the whole time. I mean, this happens every day. It happens every day that people are out deceiving other people, and then that stuff comes to the light and they're like, well, that wasn't a very good example. He was a bad example. And you know, we do these things by lying, by hiding things. And, you know, again, I was saying even about like our kids, as I see things in me, in them, they're not necessarily things that I intentionally sow into them. They're not things that I intentionally teach them. They're things that they just learn just from being around, from picking up. And people will pick up that junk off of you, absolutely, if you don't deal with it. They will pick it up. You don't have to say, you know, here's the magazine. You don't have to say, you know, here's this, you know. Yeah, I mean, you don't have to give them access. You don't have to give them the drugs. They will pick up on this stuff and they will go that route. And it's absolutely spiritual. It will rub off on them. We have to deal with this stuff because we're leaders. We're influencers. Every single person here. Gabe, there's kids in your class that you influence. You realize that? There's kids in your class that they see what you do and they're like, man, I can't believe he took the high road there. I can't believe he didn't jump in on picking on this one kid, or, you know, talking bad about the teacher, or whatever the case may be. We're leaders. And I love this. Joe DiMaggio said this. He said, "A person always doing his or her best becomes a natural leader just by example." Just by example. Because we're not perfect. We're not sinless. But we can sure as heck give our best. We can sure give our best each and every day, because being an example in purity does not mean being sinless. But it sure means giving your best and kicking it out the door when you recognize it, by trying to overcome it, by doing your best to get past it. And if we're not doing our best, then you can't expect the people that you influence to give their best. I'm serious. If you don't give your best, don't expect people you influence to give their best. They're not going to do it because they're learning from you. They're watching their coworker. They're watching their boss. They're watching mom. They're watching dad, brother, sister. Or if you're just a Christian, they're just watching you. I'm serious. You're being more watched and scrutinized than any other person in the place. Guaranteed. They're watching you. And so we can't expect them to give our best if we don't give ours, because they will be influenced by our example. And so we should be this example to live a life pleasing to God. No, that doesn't mean that you have to be perfect. I'm trying to beat this into everybody's hearts today, not just heads, because it's not about knowledge, but trying to beat this into everybody's heart. It's not about being perfect, but it is about being repentant. It is about being repentant. And you know what? I'm not supposed to do this. I know the word says I'm not supposed to do this. Lord, forgive me. You know, Ben, pray for me. This is what I've done. Pray for me. Help me through this. I'm going to turn the other way. I'm going a different direction. I'm not doing this junk anymore. You know, we should be this example being pleasing to God. We have to admit our faults, confess our sins, and strive for godliness. And here's another thing is sometimes we have to admit our faults even to those people that we influence, even to those people that are under us. We have to admit our faults at times. And we've done this. I heard Christy tell Marissa just the other day she was sorry for something. Sorry for saying something or acting a certain way or something. We have to admit our faults to those people that we influence. We have to. Otherwise, why would they ever do it? How are people ever going to learn if the people that influence them never say they're sorry? They never make a mistake. They're perfect. Nothing ever comes out in the light. That's a really tough thing to live up to as somebody who's being mentored. Doesn't matter if it's a child or an adult. It's a really hard thing to live up to. And, you know, I've done that with people I've managed. I've told them I'm sorry for things. And something that it does is it shows humility. When we're telling someone lesser, and I do that in quotes for the recording, it's in quotes, someone lesser, you know, on the priority, on the food chain or whatever, a child and a parent or a boss and an employee or whatever, somebody who's viewed as lesser by society. When we do that, it shows that we make mistakes and that we're not too big to own up to it and apologize. And that shows them that's okay. It's okay when you make a mistake. It's okay when you mess up. And, you know, I think a lot of the reason that today there's people not in church, many of you have heard this excuse, it's because I'm not good enough for church yet, right? Like, I got to take care of some things before I can get there. And I remember standing in the kitchen, I think I was doing junior high this time, and there was a parent who, they don't come here and they haven't for a long time, so don't try to figure it out, you won't. But they weren't letting their kid come to Breakthrough because they got in trouble. And I was like, and listen, I've been tempted to do this because Xander loves Breakthrough. He loves coming on Wednesday night. And I've really been tempted to be like, you know what? You're not going. But think about this for just a minute. This is a thought that came to me in the shower the other day as I was thinking about this message. So many people today think that we have this mean God that I have to get right to come to church, right? I got to get right before I can even come in here. When a child is told that they can't come to church because they've been bad, how do you think that impacts their view of God? I can't go to church because I've been bad. Okay, wait a minute. So God doesn't like me when I'm bad. I can't go there. I can't worship him. And then now my God, how he views me is dependent on how I act. When I mess up, he's mad at me. I want to hide from him. Right? Now he's mad at me and I want to hide from him. I don't want to show him what I've done because he's mad at me. And I'm not supposed to be in his presence whenever I'm bad. Listen, that's the place you need to be when you're being bad, is in the presence of the Lord. And I'm not trying to, if anybody's in that boat, I'm not trying to fix parental, I mean, you parent how you want. I'm just saying, this is something I thought about, is we live in a society where people think they have to be good to come to church. You don't have to be good to come to church. We can't use that as discipline. I've thought about it before, and you know what? That's not hurting him in a disciplinary way. It could be changing his view of God. And that really brought conviction on me where I'm like, I can tell you with certainty, I will never do that again. I'll never even entertain the thought. Like, why would I do that? I don't want him to think that he can't go to church if he's bad, or that God doesn't love him when he's bad. And so we have to be careful how we are showing our faults. We have to be careful how we're representing Christ. And we have to think about the fact that we are ambassadors for Christ. We represent him. And so this means that some people, the only exposure they may have to God is you. Like, that might be it. You may work with some sinful people that the only exposure they get to God is you. Because as soon as they go home, on the way home, they hit the bar or, you know, the drug dealer or whatever. And they're not even in their right mind until work the next day, if they are, even are at that point. They may be around just negative darkness their whole evening, their whole night, and their whole morning. And you might be the only experience that they have with God. And that's why being an example is so important. Because you never know when that one instance is going to happen. You never know when that one person is dependent upon you to see Jesus. See, I've had this wrong for a long time. I've always thought, like, don't look at me, look at him. Like, it's true to a point. Yeah, they should not be looking at me. They should be looking at him, but they ought to be seeing him in me. Like, that's the way that we ought to be. We've got it all wrong when we're deflecting it like, do not look at me, look at Jesus. It ought to be, look at me and see Jesus. Look at me and see how he's changed me, and being genuine, being real. That, hello, I'm not perfect. I do mess up, and so you're going to see some faults in me, but I'm going to admit those faults. I'm going to teach you that this is how we do it. If I can tell you my faults, I can tell God my faults. If I can't even tell a man or a woman my faults, I can't honestly tell God my faults. Because he's a lot scarier than you guys. No offense. I mean, it's a lot scarier for me to think about telling God where I've messed up than to tell one of you. Because you guys don't control my destiny here, all right? I'm a little bit more frightened of God. That's the fear of God. That's the fear of the Lord, not I have to hide it from him, but like, I better come clean. Like, that's what the fear of the Lord's about. Not because fear what he can do to you because he's mean. It's fear what he can do to you because you need to come clean. You need to give it up. You need to free yourself. And so again, wrapping up here, concluding, if Jason, if you guys want to come up, think again, do I set this example with my life that I want others to follow? And can we say, as Paul did, imitate me as I imitate Christ, follow me as I follow Christ? Like, can we say that? And we must be careful not only just to teach the right things, but to show them. This is how we live our lives. This is how we do the things that we teach, because it's so important that we have to share more than knowledge. We have to share more than knowledge. And I've met with people before that, you know, sometimes I try to tell them, this is what the word says. This is how you have to apply this to your life. But you know what? People don't want to just know that God will help them through their situation. They want to be able to relate with a person. They want someone to, okay, well, you've been through this. Okay, now it's not just these are God's promises, but these are God's promises, and I see them in action. This person has gone through this. That's what people need. People need something they can relate to. They need something that they can look forward to, and they want to know, like, well, how are you so peaceful in the storm? Like, how are you not losing your mind with all that stuff going on in your life? That's what's going to change somebody's life, is when they see us, and they see us acting what we preach, showing what we teach. Why are your kids doing so well? How's your marriage so great while you guys are going through this major trial? This is like, this would kill me. This would shatter my world. Or maybe it is, and you've been through it. How can you know for sure about your purpose in life? That's one where people are like, I don't know what I'm doing. I have no idea what I'm doing here. Like, they want to know, like, okay, well, here's kind of what I've learned. Here's what I've gone through. Here's the steps that God's taken me through. It's not always easy. But God has a plan. And so this is why our testimony is so important. And I know you guys did testimonies the week we were gone, but we cannot afford to wait for other people to be kind. We can't wait for other people to show love. We can't wait for other people to forgive. We can't wait for others to apologize. We can't wait for someone else to have faith or stand for righteousness. You have to show them. You have to be the example. I have to show them. I have to be the example. And Christ was the example for us. In John 15, 13, it says, greater love has no man than this, than to lay one's life down for his friends. He left us an example. And that brings us back to having a renewed mind, a refreshed mind in being an example. It's not about what we know. It's about who we know, certainly. It's about having that knowledge. But it's about loving people, loving God, loving people, and showing that, being that example with the way that we live our lives. So the way I want to end today is we're going to open up the altar. Ben and I and Christy, if you could come with me. We're going to be available to pray with people. And I want people to have the opportunity, if you feel like you've really struggled in some of these areas and being an example in words, in purity, in conduct, in spirit, in love, if you've been trying and trying, you can't seem to overcome those areas, I want you to come down and get prayer from one of us. We're going to pray in faith, believing that God can work in your life, that God can help you through these things, that you could be the example. Because I want you guys to be encouraged. I want you to leave here today like, you know what? I got a responsibility to be an example, and I'm excited to do it. I don't want you to leave beat down like, tried that, I failed in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, all 6 of them. I don't even remember how many there was. But I don't want you to leave here beat down today. We want you to leave here encouraged. Like, I can do this by the power of Christ in me. So Jason's going to lead in a worship song. If you want to receive prayer, you can come down to Ben or to Christy and myself. If not, worship the Lord. Pray for others. Let's be an example.